preach somewhere long enough and you will accumulate a few regrets. And after preaching here with this church for 8 years, one of my biggest regrets is that I have not used more U2 lyrics in my sermons. Yes, I've quoted a few lyrics in a few sermons over the years, but not nearly enough. And while today I don't have a U2 lyric to share with you, I do want to share a quote from Bono about honesty and songwriting. He says, "When you've got a song to write or a blank page, just describe what is on your mind. Not what you'd like to be on your mind. If you feel you have nothing to say, your first line then is, I have nothing to say." That's good advice, not only for writing a song, but also for writing a sermon. So let me say at the start, I don't have much to say today. I've already preached my four best pandemic sermons. I've already given you my best messages on hope and patience and loving our neighbor and doing our civic duty and standing in awe before the mysterious holiness of God. I really don't know what else to say about our current situation. Even as we are about to launch into a new season of the year and our kids are going back to school, some at home and some in the classroom, even as we're entering into what we hope is a new phase of this pandemic, what we hope will be better days ahead, even though many of the experts I'm listening to are saying, no, it's actually going to get worse in the fall, I really don't know what to say today. And not knowing what to preach to a congregation feels a lot like not knowing what to pray to God. There's a need, there's a desire, but the words, the thoughts, the ideas aren't always there. And for the past couple of weeks, I've been doing what I often prescribe for others when they tell me that they've run out of words to pray to God. I've been dwelling in the Psalms, reading those ancient prayers slowly and carefully, letting their vocabulary and their rhetoric and their rhythm wash over me and seep into my soul. If you don't know what to pray, if you don't know what to say to or about God, go to the Psalms. There really is a psalm for every occasion. Not every psalm resonates with everyone on every day and every season of life. The psalms of well-being, those psalms that were written when everything seems to be right in the world, they're not doing anything for me right now. But I do find myself predictably drawn to the psalms of lament. I love the honesty of the lament psalms. I love the way the psalmists articulate their doubts, their disappointment, their disillusionment, their disorientation to God. The majority of the psalms are laments, complaints about life to God, or sometimes they are complaints about God to God. This is what Dietrich Bonhoeffer said about the lament psalms many years ago. The Psalms know it all. Serious illness, deep isolation from God and humanity, threats, persecution, imprisonment, and whatever conceivable peril there is on earth. They do not deny it. They do not deceive themselves with pious words about it. They allow it to stand as a severe ordeal of faith. Indeed, at times, they no longer see beyond the suffering, but they complain about it all to God. In other words, The Psalms, the lament Psalms, do not preach peace when there is no peace. The psalmists do not pretend that they're fine when they're really not fine. And they do not talk or pray the way they think they should talk or pray, or the way other people want or expect them to talk or pray. Instead, they talk about and pray about their experience of life in God's world with refreshingly candid and sometimes bracing honesty. Today, I want to walk you through a psalm I've been pondering for the past couple of weeks. Psalm 77. And no, this is not a psalm about Luca. Although, if he does lead the Mavs to a championship in the next couple of years, I will gladly pen a psalm of thanksgiving, not lament, in his honor. But Psalm 77 today is a lament psalm. It's written by Asaph. And this is how he begins in verse 1. I cry aloud to God, that he may hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. I think of God and I moan. I meditate and my spirit faints. Asaph is in distress. He doesn't tell us why. He doesn't tell us what has happened. We don't know the nature of his trouble, but what he does tell us is that crying out to God isn't helping. He continues in verse 4. You keep my eyelids from closing. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. I consider the days of old and remember the years of long ago. I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. Asaph says, I can't sleep. I'm not resting well. And when I do doze off, I have one of those crazy corona dreams where I'm being stalked by a giant centipede. I get no peace. I can't speak. There are no words. There's nothing left to say. And when I remember the good old days, that doesn't make me feel any better. In fact, it only makes me feel worse because things are so much worse now than they used to be. Every good memory I have reminds me of something now that I'm not getting to do or enjoy because of this stupid pandemic. Asaph is experiencing a crisis of faith. His ordered world has been turned upside down. He's disoriented. And his usual strategies for making his world right again, for feeling good again, they're not working. Prayer, meditation, pleasant memories. Instead of helping, they're actually making him feel worse. And in verse 7, he dares articulate his doubts about God. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love ceased forever? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in his anger shut up his compassion? Asaph wonders. This is what he's thinking about all night when he can't sleep. He wonders, God, are you no longer caring for me? Do you no longer keep your promises? Are you no longer willing to come to my aid? Have you forgotten how to be gracious? And this leads to verse 10, the most interesting and the most perplexing verse in the whole psalm. The vocabulary in the original language is obscure. It's impossibly difficult to translate, and that's why it's rendered differently in different English translations. Here are a few of the possibilities. Here's the way the NIV renders it. Then I thought, To this I will appeal. The years when the Most High stretched out his right hand. This is the most neutral of the translations. Asaph is saying, here's where I'll find my encouragement. I will remember what God has done in the past. But notice the way the NRSV takes it in a bit more negative direction. And I say, it is my grief that the right hand of the Most High has changed. And then there's the Common English Bible. It is my misfortune, I thought, that the strong hand of the Most High is different now. And then there's the way Peterson paraphrases this verse in the Message. Just my luck, I said. The high God goes out of Asaph appears to be considering the possibility that God has changed. That God is not as reliable now as he once was. That God will not come to his aid, will not protect him now the way he protected them in years past. Asaph wonders, God, have you changed? Is this why you've left me hanging out to dry? Do I hear a hint of whining in verse 10? You answered their prayers, but you're not answering mine. You blessed them, you're not blessing me. You protected them back then, but you're not protecting me now. And if he's not whining, there's certainly a bit of self-pity or self-absorption in what he says. Asaph has allowed his distress to reduce his view of the world, his view of God, his trust in God, to the size of his trouble. He's stuck in a moment he can't get out of. And there's your YouTube lyric for today. And then in verse 11, there's a shift. The tone of the psalm changes. We don't know how much time passes in between verse 10 and 11. We don't necessarily know how the construction of these psalms works. Did Asaph write verse 10 and then take a break, maybe for a day or a week or a month, and then come back with a different perspective and finish his prayer? We don't know, but there is a change in tone. This is what he says in verse 11. I will call to mind the deeds of the Lord. I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your mighty work and muse on your mighty deeds. Asaph changes his focus. Instead of focusing on his problems, rehearsing all of his trouble, he says, I will remember the mighty works of God, all the big things God has done in the past. Instead of meditating on his distress, he contemplates the mighty deeds of God, what separates God from all others in all of creation. And it's this change in focus that leads to the decisive turn in verse 13. Asaph says, your way, O God, is holy. What God is so great as our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have displayed your might among the peoples. With your strong arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. Asaph's renewed focus on God renews his thoughts about God, and he remembers how great and how good God is. And he goes on in verse 16 and following all the way to the end of the psalm to describe the way God saved his people from slavery in Egypt and then led them through the Red Sea. The psalm ends on a high note of celebration, the glory of God, the goodness of God. Asaph's external crisis at the beginning of the psalm remains unresolved. We don't know how or when or even if his trouble went away or if his situation got better. We don't have a clue. We don't know. But his internal crisis at the end of the psalm is resolved. His shaky faith in God is renewed. He closes the psalm by celebrating God's holiness, God's power, God's strength, God's salvation. And how Asaph was able to make this shift, we're not exactly sure. He doesn't tell us. He doesn't connect the dots for us. But he does leave behind one important clue. In his commentary on this psalm, Walter Brueggemann notes that the first 12 verses of this psalm are dominated by the word I. Almost every line begins with I. But then there's a shift in verse 13 to you. And the word I is not used again. Brueggemann describes this as a move from preoccupation with self to submission to and reliance on God. It's a shift from self-preoccupation, I, to reliance and trust in God. You. At the beginning of the psalm, Asaph is focused on how big his trouble is and how little God seems to be responding to it. But by the end of the psalm, he's totally focused on the bigness, the goodness, the greatness of God. So much so, he doesn't mention his trouble again. If you're in a bit of a funk, like I am, if you feel a little bit depressed, like I do, if you've run out of words to pray and words to say, words that you're not sure were making much of a difference anyway, this psalm's invitation to you and to me, this psalm's invitation to us, is to lift our eyes and change our focus and shift our perspective. This psalm invites us to focus less on our trouble and more on a holy God. More on the holy God who created the world, who parted the sea, who raised Christ from the dead. Now, I don't expect that this shift in focus will instantly solve all of our problems or make the coronavirus miraculously disappear from the face of the earth. It doesn't even guarantee that we'll get to watch football this fall. But this shift in focus may renew our trust in our Heavenly Father, who has been shepherding His world and His people through one crisis after another for thousands of years. This pandemic will come to an end. We will find ourselves on the other side of this mess. How do I know this? Why do I believe these things to be true? Because every pandemic in the history of the world has come to an end. And previous generations have found themselves standing on the other side of much bigger existential threats than we're currently experiencing. The God who was with them yesterday is with us today and will be with our children's children's children tomorrow. If God's past performance is any indicator of God's future faithfulness, God will see us through this. So may we focus on God more and our current troubles less. And may the God who parts the sea and raises the dead, may our God, give us the faith and the courage and the strength we need to keep going. I'll see you next time.